the Quest Kodiak, a unique airplane, an even more unique company. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Paul Schaller, who is the president and CEO of Quest Aircraft. And the reason we're talking today, other than the fact that we try to seek out all the interesting people we've never talked to before on this special feature, is a couple of important milestones in the company's development in the past week, namely the delivery of aircraft number 1 and 2 to customers. Paul, thanks for taking a few minutes out from what I know is a busy week.
You're welcome.
First of all, you are in a unique position this week among all CEOs who have their boards of directors in town, and that is that you're high-fiving and smiling. Tell us a little bit about your news.
Well, we're very pleased to announce the first 2 deliveries of Kodiak aircraft to customers, and the customers are equally excited to receive them. It's been a good week for us. Last week with announcing Spirit Air being our first depositor, first customer, receiving their Kodiak, and this week working with a company that's very close to our heart, Spokane Turbine Center, getting their Kodiak, which will be used for training pilots for the mission field. And that's really one of the main purposes for Quest, and so we're very excited about being able to deliver that to them as well.
All right, tell us a little bit about the Kodiak and its how it was designed. I mean, you obviously set out to serve a very specific niche here, and obviously you've succeeded. You have some people waiting in line to buy the product.
Yes, that's correct, Paul. We had started out as a and founded as an organization that was intending to provide an aircraft primarily for mission and humanitarian aviation around the world. And as such, we sought out people that fly in those kinds of environments and asked them what it was they wanted to see in an aircraft, what they didn't see in the commercial market today, and what kinds of things they thought they wanted to see. The requirements, very simply stated, are a short takeoff and landing aircraft that burns jet fuel as opposed to avgas and can take off and land in most, i.e. about 95%, of the runways that a STOL 206 can get in and out of, and, of course, carry 2 to 3 times the useful load. So that was the basic parameters that they came up with, and the Kodiak is the result of that. Having done that and built that class of and category of plane, we're finding that there are quite a few other market segments that are interested in a plane that operates with this level of performance for a variety of reasons. Spirit Air is going to be using it as a 135 charter operator. And, of course, we've sold the aircraft also into the jump market for parachute operations. We've sold it to the U.S. government for a variety of different utilitarian kinds of applications. And so there are quite a few different market segments that the Kodiak platform can be used in order to be able to solve different kinds of needs.
Was the name of the aircraft, to call it the Kodiak, was that just kind of picked out of thin air, or did you have specifically in mind the idea that this might work in harsh climates?
Well, one of our taglines is, if it can take you here, it can take you anywhere. And Kodiak Island in off Alaska was about one of the most remote places we could think of. Our chairman, former chairman of the board of Quest, was the CEO and chairman of Alaska Airlines, and so we sort of had an affinity for the 50th state and for the direction that things might be heading there. And, of course, the aircraft itself is going to be highly useful in many applications where perhaps beavers or otters are being used today are getting a little tired. So Kodiak seemed to fit for a whole lot of reasons.
How big is this market? Because obviously it costs almost as much to design an aircraft that's going to sell 12 a year or something as it does one that's going to sell 200 a year. How did you make a business case for a plane to serve this niche?
Well, the business case was really made based on the need for this aircraft for mission and humanitarian aviation. And it was not necessarily a penciled out economic analysis. It was more of an emotional one with just a really strong sense that this is a market segment that that needed an aircraft in order to be able to reach people in the most remote regions of the world with food, with medicine, and with the word. And so those were the parameters. And while we certainly looked at the overall market and thought that there certainly would be a commercial market for the aircraft, the predominant focus was really on just solving this problem for the mission aviation folks.
All right. Now, when you say that was the case setting out, a lot of people get into the business driven by emotion and don't put a business plan together. You guys have done something remarkable here. Would it be fair to say that your investors were also driven by the same emotional or spiritual motivation?
That would be very fair to say. Investment in the company is rather unusual in this business. We don't have any venture capital investors. We don't have any large private equity firms making investments in Quest. Quest has been built off of the deposits from Mission Aviation organizations who provided us with advanced deposits on their aircraft in order to be able to design the Kodiak and get our production underway. We also have a few low-interest loans from some people who also share that vision and really want to help in a way that is through a loan rather than through any sort of donation. And our partners in this area, with the Quest, we call them Quest Mission Team, are these mission and humanitarian organizations which need these aircraft, and we have about 14 of them. They're on our website. And those are the ones that have provided us with these advanced deposits by virtue of their fundraising efforts. So, yes, the money that started Quest really came from people that share the vision and share the purpose that the plane was built for.
Well, that's an amazing story. It certainly is a somewhat different tack than the development stories of a lot of companies we look at, and it's great that it has worked out for you in a very unique way. We're talking today with Paul Schaller, who is the president and CEO of Quest Aircraft, about the deliveries of Kodiaks 1 and 2 to customers, and we'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Platt. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and no ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Platt, talking today with Paul Schaller, who is the president and CEO of Quest Aircraft Company. The company announced in the past week that its first two customer aircraft have been delivered, and we're here to find out a little bit more about not only a unique aircraft, but a unique company. Paul, I want to ask you about the state of the business today, the aircraft business. First of all, what background did you have in the aviation industry that would have equipped you to do this project?
Not very much, quite frankly, in the aircraft manufacturing business. I have been involved in Silicon Valley in California with a variety of startups, taking companies public and doing mergers and acquisitions and things like that. I've been on lots of boards of directors of small companies, that entrepreneurial companies that were getting started in a variety of technology areas there. Also been involved in working in our church and working other places where mission aviation and missionaries specifically found a special place in my heart. So really, Quest is an ideal combination of my business background as well as the mission and humanitarian sense that I feel strongly about.
All right, now there are obviously some big differences between the way a company is built in the Silicon Valley and in the aviation industry. What would you say you've learned along the way? Are there any big lessons that you would not have imagined when you first got into this project?
Well, certainly some of the practices of the things that you would do at the high technology company are quite different than in the aviation business. There are others in the aviation business who come from high tech who have approached it in a very different manner. So I would say that it's not just the application of the practices, but a lot of the fundamental principles you learn in a startup do apply, but you have to go back to the principles and the theory behind why those things work one way or the other in the high-tech business, and then apply those principles or theories, and you come out with different results in the aviation business in terms of how you might build a company. However, having said that, a startup is a startup, people are people, and you go through a lot of the same phases, albeit in the aviation business, I think the pace actually is slower than in the high-tech business, where product cycles are much, much shorter.
Oh, yeah. If you started a company in Silicon Valley in 2001 and didn't have your product to market by 2007, you know, you'd be starting something else by now. Let me ask you about how this went forward, though, because it's still a fascinating story to me. You set out to serve a very specific market, and as you mentioned a few minutes ago, it was for somewhat emotional reasons, not necessarily strictly business reasons. What do you think it is that goes wrong when aviation veterans start a company, get $100 or $200 million in some cases into a project, and then aren't able to take it any further than that? Or they announce layoffs, or they announce that the company's not going to go forward. Is it that tough, or are people just making fundamental mistakes?
I don't really speak for others in terms of mistakes or errors or whatever else has gone on. I will say that any startup is difficult. Certainly one in the aviation market, if you look at the track record, would indicate that it's a very difficult market in which to get started. There are some constraints associated with entering the market that are large, huge capital investments, certainly people skills that are required, regulation authority that needs to be worked with and met. So there are certainly a lot of parameters that need to be addressed. It makes it a fairly complex way to start a company. I don't know why other companies don't make it, and quite honestly, in many cases, we've wondered why it is we have made it. We certainly are blessed to be able to be where we are, and we just are really, really thankful that we've been able to dodge a few bullets and make a few right decisions along the way and be where we are today.
All right, now you have 175 employees working for you now. You have a 3-year backlog. Obviously, people have come on board who were taking somewhat of a gamble to come to work for you over this time. Does the unique background of the company and the unique motivation for the investors and for the startup of the product itself translate into a unique environment in the workplace day to day? Are the people there for maybe different reasons from what they might have worked for other aircraft companies?
Yes, that's true, Paul. Certainly the foundations of the company and the purpose of the company and the vision is something we keep reminding each other about frequently. It's something that I repeat every time we get together as an all-hands meeting for the company. Certainly the motivation and the management of a diverse workforce is much easier when everyone is bought into the overarching purpose for the company. And certainly in the case of Quest, that purpose is different than just advancing one's career or just making money for someone else or for yourself. There is a higher purpose in some ways of what we're trying to do here, and we certainly communicate to that to each other. That also makes it a little bit of a challenge managing a business that's motivated in such a manner, but yet deals with the harsh realities of the business world. So there's challenges on both sides of that, but certainly from the standpoint of people coming to the company and being motivated together to solve problems and to create solutions and move the company forward, their motivation is not just to see an airplane be born, but to see the fruits of what that airplane is going to be able to do once it gets out into the remote areas of the world.
You know, there's an expression, if it was that easy, someone would have done it before. Talk about the competitive field as regards the Kodiak. Do you look over your shoulder and see anybody who may look at your success and think that that's something they want to compete with?
Well, certainly we kind of keep our eyes open, and in this market, because of the regulatory environment, typically you have a little bit of advance knowledge of somebody who's doing something similar. I would say that our primary motivation for being in this market segment was because the aircraft that were in this market segment were not meeting the needs of the mission and humanitarian organizations. That was our motivation. Given that that's the case, the reason for that is that the commercial aircraft companies that were existing at the time, many of them today, did not see this as being a viable market segment, or certainly not one as attractive as those that might be at the higher end of the business for corporate fleet markets or jet markets or even VLJ markets, or those that are at the lower end of maybe a composite four-seat training type of aircraft, or even a go-fast small airplane. This is kind of an in-the-middle sort of market segment, and what it's made up of is lots of small market segments as opposed to one more easily addressable monolithic segment. That makes it a harder marketing problem. It makes it harder to rationally evaluate the actual volume that that one might achieve, and so therefore it makes it a difficult business case. With us in the middle of it, it makes it even a more difficult business case for someone else to come into this portion of the market. So while that certainly may be the case, and over time, we think that that our presence here and certainly our ability to deliver aircraft in volume is going to even diminish the likelihood that somebody else would want to come into it.
How many aircraft do you envision coming down the assembly line each year? I mean, now that you're in production, what do you think you can do?
Yeah, that's a good question. Initially, we designed the facility and the machine and really the business plan, the cash needs, around a capacity of about one airplane a week. And more recently, we've sort of come to the conclusion that we may need to double that rate. So we are really just starting into the early stages of volume production now. We've invested a lot of time and effort in procedures and tools and organizational structures and different internal things to keep things moving. We've certainly embraced lean technologies for our production environment and are now starting to see that all begin to work together. So it'll be a while before we ramp up to that sort of rate on the order of 100 a year, but we are now thinking we need to resize our business plan in order to be able to set our sights on that sort of number.
That's a nice problem to have. And obviously, if there was anybody else looking at this segment, the fact that you have now accumulated a three-year backlog means that you have soaked up a lot of at least the immediate demand. I really need to congratulate you on this accomplishment, because, and not just the accomplishment of building an aircraft from zero to delivery in 7 years and being able to put a ton and a half worth of stuff on it and climb at 1,700 feet per minute, but just in the ability to hold this vision together for 7 years and get it out the other end is an amazing accomplishment. We wish you guys all success and hope to talk to you again.
Well, thanks, Paul. I'd welcome that.
Paul Schaller is the president and CEO of Quest Aircraft. You can find out more about the company and about the Kodiak at www.questaircraft.com. That's Quest Aircraft, all one word. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.